today on the Beginner Photography Podcast.
So I only have a four-sided square in the room. There's only one wall with a window. Mm-hmm. Now to control that, and I have blackout curtains on there as well. So, I mean, I can close them to a degree. It's kind of funny when you start looking at it, I'm utilizing my natural light window like a studio light, because if it's fully open, it's like a big giant softbox. But if I'm closing it, all of a sudden now I have a tiny little strip box. So, I mean, it's just about having the quality and the direction of the light.
Hey, Raymond here from the Beginner Photography Podcast. And today we're talking about getting started in boudoir photography. So let's get into it.
Welcome to the Beginner Photography Podcast with Raymond Hatfield, the podcast dedicated to helping you grow your photography skills. Raymond interviews the world's top photographers in their field to ask questions that will get you taking better photos today. Now, with you as always, husband, father, home brewer, LA Dodger fan, and Indianapolis wedding photographer, Raymond Hatfield.
Welcome back to this episode of the Beginner Photography Podcast. As always, I am Raymond, your host, and I got a bit of a story for you today. This past weekend, I had a wedding that I had been looking forward to all year, right? So this wedding, it was at a nice venue. It was going to be great, and this year, you know, weather has been just so crazy. It has been ridiculous. In fact, a lot of what's being talked about on the news about the weather is how farmers are projected to lose $51 billion in revenue because they're unable to plant crops because there's just been so much rain. So I've been really lucky this year. Every wedding that I've had, there was supposed to be rain, and then the day of, there was no rain. And this wedding was no exception leading up to it. There was scheduled to be rain, but I really didn't, factor it in too much. I really didn't care because I just assumed that all the rain would clear up by the time of the wedding. So the morning, comes, I wake up, pouring down rain. Like, okay, maybe it'll clear up just a little bit later. You know, I've been working long enough to know that I can get all the portraits that I need in about 15 minutes, and if the rain clears for that much time, then we will be okay. So I show up to the venue, still pouring down rain. And in fact, now it's harder than ever. We even had flash flood warnings. Our phones, even though like they were on silent, everybody's phones kept going off because of the flash flood warnings for where we were. And what I quickly came to the realization that I would not have any time that day to do any sort of outside portraits, any sort of photos in nature, nothing outside, nothing with any sun. I was kind of worried, to tell you the truth, because the venue, even though it was beautiful, was very small. It was essentially it's a barn. It's a barn, and it's turned into a wedding venue. And as you can imagine, there's not really a lot of space to roam around in a barn with like 150 people in there. So I thought, okay, what am I going to do to get portraits? Because as a professional photographer, I can't just say, oh, sorry, guys, it's raining. Looks like you guys aren't getting photos today. It is still my job to get this couple beautiful photos, no matter the conditions. So this is where I was so thankful for knowing how to use my my flashes, and specifically being able to use them off camera, putting them on a light stand, setting them behind the camera, behind the couple, and just moving them around so that they weren't directly on my camera pointed right at the couple, just to be able to get some interesting, fun, and unique shots that were, good quality. Because again, like I said, just because it's raining outside doesn't mean that I get a free pass and don't have to take photos. So kind of the whole point that I'm trying to make here is that I'm fortunate, right? Because I know how to use off-camera flash, but that's more of an advanced technique. I'm not saying that you need to know how to learn off-camera flash right now. But what I'm saying is that you still need a strong foundation in photography. you're going to see things like off-camera flash, and you're going to think, wow, you can create amazing portraits with that. I got to learn that. Or you're going to be able, or, you know, you'll see things with, like, tilt-shift lenses. Like, wow, you can make incredible portraits with that. I need to get a tilt-shift lens. But if you don't have a solid foundation in photography, it's all going to be for nothing. You need that strong foundation to build on, because otherwise, everything's just going to fall apart. If you don't know the fundamentals of photography and then you get an off-camera flash, none of it is going to matter. You're not going to be able to get beautiful portraits because you don't understand the fundamentals of how a camera works. And therefore, adding in an extra element is just not going to turn out very well. And so it's because of that, you know, that I just want you to realize that where you're at right now, that photography is a very long journey and you are at the starting line. And just because you're going to see cool things off into the distance, you know, that doesn't mean that you need to rush to get there. The stronger of an understanding that you have of the basics of photography, exposure, you know, how to control your settings, light, where to see it, you know, just where it naturally occurs and how to manipulate it yourself without, you know, off-camera flash or anything at this moment. And then composition, how you're going to compose your shot, how you're going to frame it. The stronger of an understanding that you have on those three things, those are the fundamentals of photography. When the time comes to build on that, to look into new specialty lenses, to look into the off-camera flash, you are going to be so much better prepared. And I'm just, once again, happy that that I'm at that point, because if I were to, you know, book a wedding and think, hey, you know, everything's going to be great, and then show up and not know how to use flash, I mean, it would have been a disaster. It would have been an absolute disaster, because essentially I just had to create things out of nothing, because I brought the light and could control it all myself. So just enjoy this time that you are in right now. Even though it seems like everything's brand new and that you don't have a full grasp of it, still do everything that you can to enjoy these moments while you grow, because one day you will get there. You're just not there today, and that's not a bad thing. Enjoy the ride, and you will get there eventually. Today's interview is one that we talk about a lot. I mean, we really get into it. This is not a technical episode by any means. This is going to get your mind in the right headspace to start shooting boudoir, right? Why shoot boudoir? What sorts of things are you looking for? And even more importantly, you're going to learn about Jessica's journey into boudoir and how it helped her. So that is it. Let's go ahead and get on into today's interview with Jessica Ray. Today's guest is boudoir photographer Jessica Ray. If you just take one look at her website, you will see that she has an incredible ability to create soul and tell a powerful story through the images that she takes. Today, I'm excited to chat about how she creates such beautiful images. Jessica, thank you so much for coming on the podcast.
Thank you for inviting me.
Of course. So, as I mentioned there, your work kind of stands alone, right? If you just look at your work compared to another photographer's work, I think that there is something that differentiates it from a visual standpoint. And that's really exciting to see as somebody who, you know, as a collective of people who just see tons of social media images every single day. But I'm sure that it took a while to get to this point to where you are today. So can you tell me how you got your start in photography in the first place?
I was about 15 years old. I don't care if you know my age, but anyway, it was a long time ago. And back in the day where we still had dark rooms in our schools. And so I actually took film class and learned how to develop my own negatives. And we did our own prints in the dark room. So that's the only formal education that I've had as far as photography goes. I've always been heavily into visual arts, whether it's drawing, painting, sculpting, woodwork. I've kind of tried my hand at all of them. I didn't actually take up photography seriously until about 2010. And then I didn't start my career or my full-time dive into the photography world until about 2013.
Okay, so what was it between those years when you were in high school, learning photography, being in the dark room, what was it that didn't I don't want to say resume.
I think I let my old man get to me, and I didn't think I could make a living being an artist. And so I tried to do the 9-to-5 grind. I tried to make a steady paycheck and all those things that, you know, that generation kind of scared you into. And I knew I wanted to start a family. So I made making a regular paycheck and starting a family my priority at a young age. So it's funny because I didn't start taking myself seriously until I became a single mother. And then I started to realize that having three little children takes up 24/7, 365 days of your time, and there's not much left for you. So I think I got back into photography more as a self-care. And drawing and painting and all that felt, you know, when you've got three, my children are very close in age. So having three little children running around, pulling out all the oil paints and getting into all of that, it's too labor intensive and it's too messy and it's too involved. Yeah. So I think I liked the act of photography that for me at that time in my life, it was kind of a clean art. There was some instant gratification with it, but I also was able to document life and moments and tell people stories. And that's kind of really what pushed me into going, no, I need to do this every day, all the time. I need to fully immerse myself into this genre.
Yeah. So when you were in high school, you mentioned the dark room. So you're shooting film. When you pick the camera back up again, first part of the question was it like riding a bike where you could just kind of pick it up naturally again? Or I guess, and then part two, what sorts of hurdles did you find when you switched to digital? Hey, Raymond here. If you're sometimes baffled by which camera settings to use, then I've got just the thing for you. My free guide, Picture Perfect Camera Settings. It's a fantastic starting point for anybody eager to understand the basics of camera settings in various shooting scenarios. And it's tailored to beginners who want to get out of auto mode, providing clear, easy to follow suggestions on where to start with your settings. So whether you're capturing a stunning landscape or a family portrait, Picture Perfect Camera Settings will help you to get off of automatic mode and explore the possibilities your camera offers. Remember, mastering photography settings is a journey, and this guide is your first step and the perfect resource to guide you towards finding the right settings for your style. So grab your copy today at perfectcamerasettings.com and start your journey to better photos.
I had all the basics. I knew, you know, my shutter speeds, my ISOs, and, you know, and my f-stops and how those all work together. But learning, I think, honestly, once you have that knowledge, it's just about learning light. And I think light is the most important factor when it comes to photography. So there was still a learning curve there. And going to digital, I mean, I was able to experiment a lot more. I was able to take more risks because it wasn't like I'm wasting money or I have to wait weeks on end to, you know, see the results and remember what my settings were and, you know, versus getting my film developed and back. So I definitely was able to be a lot more experimental and try new things, which inevitably got me to where I am, because I think that's the best and most fun part of digital photography. But I won't lie, I'm getting back into film. So.
Oh, I love it. Now, just to clarify, the best part of digital photography is the instant gratification. Is that it?
I think that was just photography in general. Mm-hmm. Painting was just more of a process.
Oh, I got it.
With digital, I think it was not having the fear and being able to let go and experiment more is the pro to digital for sure.
Okay, so you picked back up the camera, you started photographing the kids and kind of documenting their life. How did it go from there to where you are today, shooting boudoir?
Regardless of what type of art I was doing, drawing, painting, sculpting, whatnot, I've always done portraits. I've always drawn or documented people and bodyscapes. So that was just without question that when I started photography, I wanted to focus on people. I didn't take pictures of landscapes. I didn't take photographs of, you know, it was just It was just life. And it wasn't even necessarily focused on my children. It was just moments and day to day. Because of, I'd say where I've got now and why I think I got back into it was really important being a single mom. I didn't have a very healthy relationship with my ex. And so for me, at that time in my life, it was really important to shift my focus to being not just a mother, not just a wife, not just that. It was being a woman. And so that, I think, is what first propelled me into the boudoir world, was that I got to work with women and help empower them and help to let them take control of their own bodies and their own selves.
How did you first discover boudoir?
I don't really remember, actually. I mean, I can tell you who some of my early influences were. Definitely Ewan Phelan of Last 40%, who has now gone on with his wife Brianna to create Do More Photographer Community. They were definitely a big inspiration. But I can't tell you specifically if there was a moment. I mean, coming from a fine art background, I've always done life drawings and nude drawings and whatnot. So I think it's just always been ingrained in me. So boudoir, when getting into the photography genre of art, just felt like a natural progression for me.
I see. That makes sense. Okay, so I guess before we go any further, can you give those who don't know can you describe what boudoir is?
First, funny enough, I don't actually love the word boudoir because it has such a either lack of definition or too broad of a definition. I think that there are many people define it differently. Mm-hmm. I mean, you go to...
How do you define it?
The textbook definition, boudoir, right, in a woman's bedroom. And people take that a little too literally. And so if you all of a sudden are taking photos of someone out in nature or outside of a bedroom and into another type of environment, all of a sudden it's not boudoir. And that's not what that means to me. Mm-hmm. I connect more with the term intimate portraits because I feel like boudoir is too pigeonholed by at least the general population. Boudoir to me just is an intimate portrait. Doesn't have to be a woman, doesn't have to be a man. I don't care how you identify. It's just having a nice, vulnerable, intimate, candid, authentic capture of a human being.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so I'm trying to put myself in the listener's shoes real quick. And typically, the boudoir photos are wearing like intimate clothing or like evening wear.
Yeah, so boudoir typically would be lingerie in a bedroom and typically would be a woman.
Gotcha. Okay, gotcha. So if anybody's listening, now you understand going forward what it is that we are going to be talking about. So you mentioned earlier when you made the switch to digital, you focused a lot on light, right? Because that is one of the most important things that is not in the camera that you need to be focusing on. And when I reached out to the beautiful people of the Beginner Photography Podcast Facebook group about questions that they had about boudoir photography, one of them came from Isabel, and she wants to know about lighting. She wants to know about intimate lighting. And I figured if there's anybody who's going to know anything about this, it's going to be you looking at your photos. I've seen some behind the scenes photos, and you also work with some artificial lighting as well, which is awesome. So can you talk to me a little bit about lighting and kind of the mystery, I suppose, that you create?
For me, I would say I'm 90% natural light. I do like to experiment and play, and I encourage every photographer to kind of break past their comfort zones and their norms and to try different things. So I do incorporate some strobes or some constant LED lights at time. Sometimes you just get a different look. And sometimes I live on the Pacific Northwest. It's very rainy and cloudy here a lot of the time. So every now and then, if it's a really gloomy day, I need to kind of just help the sun out and give a little boost.
I love that. So what is it that you're trying to create with your lighting?
For me, my photography would be described as dark and moody lighting versus light and airy. Mm-hmm. So a light and airy is going to be a very well lit light all around, kind of 365 degrees, kind of. And it has its place. It's just not mine. I feel like the dark and moody lighting, where we're really playing up the shadows, really helps to create ambiance and drama and mood. And for me, it's going to convey a lot more emotion and tell a lot more of a dramatic and dynamic story.
Okay, so spending more time in the shadows. I love that. I love that, accentuating the shadows, or playing up the shadows, rather. So does that mean, how would you approach a situation? Because I know that a lot of new photographers are worried about shooting like in low light situations. Is playing with shadows the same as working in low light conditions?
It is, but there's a huge misconception with dark and moody photography that it's either very low or having a lack of light. Mm-hmm. And that can't be farther from the truth. If you walk into my back bedroom, for example, where it has my absolute favorite lighting, it's a north-facing window, so it doesn't get any direct sunlight, but it has the most consistent and even and predictable lighting, regardless of the weather outside.
That's got to be great.
It's actually a very bright room. So if you're walking in there and you have no idea how I've created my work, you're going to be like, oh, you must close the curtains or you must do this. And that's just not true at all. It's not about a lack of light. It's about the direction and the placement of light. So if I have a room that's going to have multiple, like say a four, you know, you're in a boxed room, there's four sides to a square. If you're going to have lights on either opposing sides or all three sides, you're not going to be able to achieve that dark and moody lighting. You're going to get more light, even airy lighting, because there's light all around. So it's definitely going to be about the direction of the light and the placement of the light in conjunction with your subject. Mm-hmm. So you don't want to have your back to the light. That's going to create a more flat lighting scenario.
You mean as the photographer or of the subject?
Yeah, right. So I don't want the light to my back.
Gotcha.
I want it to my subject's side or back. So okay. The light source for me is always to my side or in front of me.
Gotcha. Okay.
And then that way my shadows are created facing the camera because the light source is to the side and behind.
Creating so that's suspense.
You play up more of the shadows, correct? Whereas the light source is behind me and facing my subject, I'm getting a flat lighting all around and I'm losing all of my shadows.
Yeah. So let's say that you weren't in this room, right? You had to go out and shoot somewhere else. I think at times, like when I see a lot of like intimate portraiture, the lighting can be either very soft or it can be very hard, like to accentuate aspects of the body. So can you talk to me about how you like how hard or how soft you like your lighting?
I'm definitely a fan of hard light. I love contrast. I love high contrast is definitely my jam.
And do you get that through your window in that bedroom?
Absolutely. Yeah. So I only have a four-sided square in the room. There's only one wall with a window. Mm-hmm. Now to control that, and I have blackout curtains on there as well. So, I mean, I can close them to a degree. It's kind of funny when you start looking at it, I'm utilizing my natural light window like a studio light, because if it's fully open, it's like a big giant softbox. But if I'm closing it, all of a sudden now I have a tiny little strip box. So I mean, it's just about having the quality and the direction of the light.
I love that.
Versus just filling a room completely with light.
Yeah, just making it come in from everywhere, for sure. I totally understand.
So I mean, while I still prefer natural light, you can definitely get all of these, the same dark and moody look using strobes and using artificial light sources as well.
Hey, Raymond here, and we will get back to today's show in just a moment. You know, if you want to photograph people, you know, families, portraits, weddings, engagements, you know that the elephant in the room is posing. You have a pretty good understanding of how to use your camera, you know how to make a pretty picture, but when somebody steps in front of your lens, Well, imagine if you knew how to make them look their best and feel confident. That is what you can do when you understand basic posing techniques. So I want to give you access to my free posing guide over at photoposingguide.com. There are 9 different categories and more than 80 real example photos of poses that you can use for inspiration to rock your next session. Once again, you can download your free photo posing guide over at photoposingguide.com. Now, let's go ahead and get back into today's interview. I kind of want to go back to when you first started. I asked there earlier kind of how you found boudoir and how you moved into that space. Can you tell me about your first boudoir client? Like, how did you, I want to know how you booked them. Were you nervous?
And
how
did it turn out? Accident. I was just kind of, I was at that time I was doing a little bit of everything. Mm-hmm. And I had a client ask me and I just loved it. I didn't realize how much I was going to like it. She loved the result and I didn't really think too much about it after that. This was before I decided to go. I'd say this was in the between 2010 to 2013. And I just kind of dabbled in it a little bit. I just kind of played here and there, not taking it or myself seriously. And then when I decided to, like I say, I think my primary focus was just on photographing women at the time, which is definitely expanded and I'm all inclusive and everybody's welcome here in the studio. But at that time, I just wanted to focus on women because I think that's what I needed in my own personal journey in my life at that time. And so when I look at it in hindsight, it's hard for me to remember exactly what the thought process I was going through then. But when I look back at my journey, I definitely came from a place where I needed to take back control of things in my life and my process. And I totally had like 5 thoughts in my head and now I've just gone trying to pick which one to focus on.
Yeah.
So excuse my.
And they're all about the nervousness you were feeling. Is that it?
No, I just, I have a squirrel brain. So I've got like 5 things going on there. In the process of having one conversation, we will have 10 mini conversations within that one conversation. That's how my brain works. It's really hard for me to really go back to that place because I think at that point in my life, I was in a survival mode. And so I think a lot of my conscious memories and perceptions at that time are kind of skewed just based on my own personal life experience during that time. I think it's kind of funny because when I started photographing boudoir and deciding to do this, like I said, it was about power and control for me and wanting my clients to be, you're in control, you have power, you own that. And I was so afraid of being vulnerable, even though I was asking my clients to be vulnerable with me by getting naked with somebody that they barely even knew, right? Or in their lingerie. And so it's been a very interesting process during the last 6 years of going from a place of wanting to be in control and have power. And yet through this journey, I found my own vulnerability and kind of going on a tangent here. But I mean, my core why of why I do what I do has definitely evolved over the last 6 years. And I just find it fascinating myself when I really start looking at it.
So when you say that it's evolved over the past 6 years, do you mean by going from that spot of survival to now being in a place of... There are 2 ways to bring home more money with your photography business. You either get more clients or you spend less of the money that you make. CloudSpot Studio helps you keep more of what you earn. With the lowest payment processing fees in the industry, the average photographer will save $300 annually. And that's just more money to invest in essential gear like a new flash or a sweet camera bag. You know, one that is perfect for storing all of the wedding day snacks that you can pack. But it's not just about savings. CloudSpot Studio is designed to streamline your workflow. Easily organize shoots, send contracts, questionnaires, invoices, and you're really going to enjoy the hassle-free payments.
So sign up for a free CloudSpot account at deliverphotos.com. And as a bonus, you're going to get access to my exclusive wedding and portrait contracts and questionnaires at no additional cost. Why let fees chip away at your profits? Empower your photo journey with CloudSpot and watch your business soar.
I'm in a place of content and safe and love and happiness. And I feel like I used to view vulnerability as a weakness. And it's definitely not, because you cannot be brave and cannot have courage without being vulnerable. Mm-hmm. And it's been my own self journey through that process that has helped me to see this with my clients. And I think that's why my work has changed so much too. And that I used to want to, I think I wanted to get into boudoir because I viewed, I think I focused more on the sexualized portion of boudoir when I first started, because that's where I felt power and control. And I wanted to help other women to experience that because it was a very liberating thing. But through my own personal journey and process of that, I've definitely found more power, control, humility, and joy through vulnerability. But I think I separated the two early on, and I'm now finding that they are definitely connected. And so I can get so much more from my clients and from myself.
Yeah. Wow. That's an amazing journey. Thank you very much for sharing that. That's powerful.
It didn't really help any of the new beginner people, so I'm sorry. I know you're kind of asking about my
No.
First clients.
Okay. First of all, I think that it definitely does help. You know, I think a lot of people try to get it right the first time, and then they don't understand that if you've never done something before, there's no way that you can get it right and that you're supposed to.
And I don't really think there is a right way. I think everybody's going to have their own process, their own journey, and their own reasons for coming in here. One thing I tell my clients when they come in, first of all, let me backdrop for a second. I think there's two very different types of photographers. You have a business-minded photographer and you have the artist-minded photographer. I'm definitely the artist-minded photographer. Yes, I'm running a business. Yes, I have overhead. Yes, I need to, you know, make the bottom line and make the dollars work. But that is not my mission with what I do. So I'm not about getting a client in the door, booking 5 sessions in a day, and having an assembly line cookie cutter process to my art. Yes, I have some go-to poses. Yes, everybody kind of wants, you know, in the bathtub or in that chair or in that spot. They kind of all like, I've seen it in your work. I really want it. But I think something that's important is when you look at my portfolio, at least I feel that I don't have repeats. It's not like you go through my portfolio and be like, oh, there's that same pose with 5 different people. So it might be similar, but they're all unique, because for me, I'm really trying to create art, and you as my subject are definitely playing a part in that art. I don't micromanage. I don't pose to the fact that everybody has to look an exact certain way. I want you to bring your personality, your story, and your journey to the art that we're creating.
Yeah. I think that a lot of people are going to take a lot away from that statement right there. As somebody who, I recently surveyed my audience, and one of the questions that I asked was, do you have any intention on starting a business one day? And I was surprised that almost 75% said yes, but they were worried about the business side of things. And once again, you can still come at this from an artist's perspective and still be successful. And you're proof of that. And that as long as you have, I guess, processes in place, you can make it work and still be focused on creating art. So that's really cool. And like I said, I think that a lot of people are going to get a lot from that. But this popped into my brain. I was thinking about back to that first client that you were talking about there. And you said that they asked you to take boudoir photos of them. And since this was your first boudoir shoot, how did you get ideas and inspiration to best prepare?
Definitely when you're starting out. I mean, you want to, it's good to find inspiration, find people that you like, right? Look at their work. It's okay to copy people. Really, at this point in life, I don't think anybody really has an original idea. I always say, I'm not here to invent the wheel. I'm just here to remarket it or paint it a different color or, you know, make it mine in my own way. So don't be afraid to start a Pinterest board with all of your favorite poses and stuff like that. And when your client's changing, have a little, you know, look and a go-to, because that's the hardest thing when you're starting is how to get all these poses. Something I'd like to touch on, and I know I'm not in the norm as far as professional photographers go in this belief, but something I found really helpful in my own journey and process is working with other people in our industry. There are too many photographers that really believe that photographers are, that's it, that's our industry. And it's not. We have makeup artists, we have stylists, we have models, we have all of these other people that are part of our industry. That's like saying an actor or a director is the only part in their industry. It's just not true. So I really encourage you when you're starting out to reach out and either get in a friend and then just focus on the lighting, or get in a friend and just focus on the posing. What I found personally for me was I started making connections in my local, I used the term model with air quotes, because there's a very, it's a very broad range of models. I can get models sometimes in that are more work than, or just as much work as they are with a client than they are as is. Anyway, you want to bring in someone maybe that's strong in posing. And it doesn't have to be a model, but it can be. And we can do TFP sessions. Those are a trade for portfolio. So they're going to help you to build your portfolio, and you're going to give them images to help grow theirs, and you work together. So the last thing I wanted to do when I was really wanting to analyze light was to worry about posing and everything else. So learn your camera. And then when you're wanting to learn the light, bring in somebody that you don't have to worry about. I could just focus on the lighting and how she was in relation to it. And like I say, it doesn't have to be a model. It can be a friend or something. Don't worry about making money at the beginning. Just go out and play and experiment and know your stuff and learn it 110% before you start charging money.
I love that. I love
it. Didn't really answer your question. Again, I'm going on tangents.
No,
but
you know what? I love this because it's starting some sort of fire within that is...
It does. It's, yeah. I start igniting all the little things that I think about. How I went about with her, I really think I just went on Pinterest. I looked up the photographers like you and Phelan, and that at the time that I really respected and admired. And just, it's okay. It's okay to copy people at first. That's how you learn things, right? It's like you've got to learn the rules in order to break the rules.
Oh, I like that.
So you need to copy other people when you're starting out, and that's totally okay. But do it and go, why does this work? Why do I like it? Now, how can I tweak it? And how can I evolve it and make it my own?
Okay, so now we've kind of skipped a step, because now we have somebody in front of the camera. I want to know how would you suggest if you didn't have a portfolio, like if you were starting today? So this question came from Norm in the group. Norm, he wants to know if he's getting started and he doesn't have a portfolio, how do you approach subjects to be a part of a boudoir shoot? And then more importantly, as you just mentioned, like make them comfortable in front of the camera.
Making them comfortable is definitely going to come with time and experience on your part. The more comfortable and confident you are, the more comfortable and confident your subject's going to be. Definitely if you're super fresh and your brand's spanking new and you have no portfolio, ask friends. Once you have a few of those, you can kind of, you know, got a little bit of that under your belt. Like I say, join your local Facebook communities. We have local industry groups. Search out keywords that are your area. So my area near Vancouver, we have YVR, 604 is our area code, all those kind of things. And we have Facebook groups that have models, makeup artists, photographers, actors, all these kind of things. And you can do a shout out. This is how I find my makeup artist back in the day as well. I now have a great working relationship with a girl that I've been working with for 2.5 years, but that's how we found each other originally. And so I think when you have a bunch of you just kind of, there's tons of people in those groups that are starting out. You have brand new makeup artists, you have new and aspiring models, you as a photographer that are new, and you can all get together and just play and experiment, and you all win because you all get images. You all are going to learn together. It's just a fantastic way of starting your portfolio.
Yeah, that's a really good tip, especially being local, because not only are they going to be, well, local, but now you're starting to build up your network, like you said. I love that.
Absolutely. And I'll tell you, I still get paying clients from when I work with some of my friends that are do modeling or do acting. And if I work with them, basically, if I have a new idea or something new I want to try, I would never experiment on a paying client. They came in to get good, solid work and not have me experiment because it might not always work. And if it does work, well, my clients are never, ever required because of, see, boudoir is a different genre. It's not like a portrait or a family photo or something like that, where you're more likely to get people willing to share their images on social media and your website. Clients aren't always going to be up for that. So if you experiment on a client and you got something amazing, that client might not necessarily let you share it with the world. And so what are you going to do then? You can't share this new awesome thing you learned to try and get new clients in to try it out. So bring in a friend or bring in a model or hire a model. I'm not saying just do things for free. If you really want somebody that's awesome with posing to help teach you how to pose or so you can focus on lighting, pay them. Pay a professional to come in and take care of the stuff that you don't want to stress about so you can focus on the other thing that you're learning.
I hadn't thought about that. I had not thought about that aspect.
So some photographers I find come in and they know exactly what they want and they'll hire a model and do this, this, and this, this. And I might have some ideas that I specifically want them to do, but I always let them have some free play and free reign, at least for part of the session, because I guarantee you I learn something new every single time I work with one. They've taught me a new pose or they taught me how to use my prop in a new way, like a chair or bed, things that I wouldn't have thought about. So I think collaborations are super important in our industry with other creatives just to help spark those fires and teach you new things.
Of course. What is something that you've learned most recently? What's one of the most recent things that you've learned?
Oh,
got excited about. I'll put you on the spot there.
Well, something new I've learned. I think, I don't know. I mean, I'm constantly learning and growing and evolving every single day. That's hard to, I'm a very intuitive person. I don't consciously think about things a lot.
That makes sense.
On like a conscious level.
You learn new ways to shoot in your studio. I work with another photographer.
I'm sorry. My husband works with me and he's sitting here like
it.
Trying
I can hear him,
to shoot
yeah.
some stuff in my ear here.
He's got some great ideas right there.
He's like, what about this? What about this? I'm like, anyway. It's okay. I think, that doesn't make sense. Sorry. He's put a little worm in my ear and I'm like, what? I had another photographer friend come in to the studio recently. And I mean, she was just kind of showing me a fresh new way of looking at my space. And so I guess that's not really something I
that's
learned.
Awesome.
I think really something for them. I think just, I guess for me, yes, it's about getting into new spaces and having people, other photographers that come into my space to help me just see things in a fresh perspective.
Mm-hmm.
So I've definitely learned the most recent things I can say that I've learned have definitely been from working with other creatives and just stepping outside of my little studio box and into the world and going into new spaces.
So before a client comes in, let's say that they find you, they reach out to you through your email or your contact form on your website. What's the next step? Do you meet with people before a shoot to find out if you're going to be a good fit or do they just come in and you start going?
I feel like I've put myself out there on my website and my social media enough that people have a pretty good feel for who I am. At least I hope they do. And that's the experience that I've had with clients. We were kind of chatting before we went live here and I was saying, I'm glad this wasn't a phone call because I don't do phones. So you're going to find a lot of contradictory information in our industry. You're going to have some people like, you have to get your client on the phone. That's absolutely, you cannot do this. You have to have in-person consultations before you do a session so you can pre-qualify your client. I don't do any of that. My clients find me the majority through Google, through my website, or they're through a referral from a friend. So they fill out the contact form on my website. I use HoneyBook. I have an awesome CRM. So it actually auto forwards them all the information. So I could be on vacation and people could be inquiring and I don't have to do anything. It's all automated. It's fabulous.
That's a pretty good feeling.
And it sends them, I ask them a lot of open-ended questions as well. Even on my contact form, it's not just like, you know, what session date do you want? It's like, why are you doing this? What prompts you to do this? You know, why do you want to come in here? So I'm already kind of getting some information from my clients as well to kind of get a little bit of information from them and really pre-qualify them for myself. Because I can kind of get from that if they're just wasting my time or if they're going to be a quality paying client.
Of course.
From there, I send out a reply email automatically. And it's pretty detailed and involved. I send out just telling them like where I'm located, when sessions take place. I make a Spark page. So there's a link in the email to click that gives them, again, more information. This is the studio. This is the process. This is the products I offer. Are you ready to book? Click here. And then it'll take them to an online booking calendar. I use Acuity. And then they select their session, their date that they want. They sign their contract and they pay their session fee all through Acuity. Everything's automated. I don't have to do anything. Using something like Acuity for your online booking is fabulous because I found the number one time waster for me was going back and forth with clients going, when are you available? No, when are you available? Yeah. Maybe next month works. When does this work? So I have specific shoot days. I shoot Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and sessions are always at 9:30 in the morning. So clients can just pick from there. It's very rare at this point if a client will be like, oh, I was really hoping you had a weekend. Well, you know what? That's fine. Let's talk about that. Maybe I can open one up for you, but it's not the norm.
Yeah.
You know, people are like, oh, but I work Monday to Friday. I'm like, that's funny. Me too.
Yeah, I was just going to ask. I would assume that a lot of people are thinking that you would get a lot of pushback being only on weekdays and in the morning, but not so much, huh? If they really want it, they make it work.
You know what? It really depends on your client market too. Mm-hmm. I will say when I started and my prices were cheaper, I attracted a very different clientele than I do now that I've raised my prices and I don't get that kind of expectation or ask anymore from those clients. They're just like, oh, I get it. You know, you must have a family and you want family time and you must have a life and you need times. And I'm like, you're right. Friday and Saturday are my family times and Sunday are my me time, if not family time.
Yeah.
So self-care is important. And I tout that a lot on my social media and my, you know, Instagram stories and all of that.
Yeah. I love to hear that. But you mentioned social media there. So I kind of want to go down that a little bit. And I think, as you mentioned earlier, because of its nature, a lot of boudoir photographers, either they have a hard time sharing images online because clients either don't want it shared, or if they do, then, you know, Facebook or Instagram takes it down and then people get banned. Have you experienced this and how do you deal with it?
I have a few times. I just try to be aware of what's happening. So obviously I'm not going to post nipples and butt cracks on social media. Those are usually the first ones to get taken down. So unfortunately I do have to censor my images. Not on my website though. My website's uncensored. It's just trying to keep up in the know. A lot of the groups, people are always talking about it. So the big thing right now is removing the word boudoir. It's like this taboo, dirty word, especially on Facebook, that boudoir groups are getting shut down. Boudoir pages are getting shut down. We don't know right now if that's because of the word boudoir or whatnot, but it seems to be kind of people are getting shadow banned on Instagram even because they've used boudoir hashtags. So as soon as I caught wind of that, I just stopped using them. So I haven't been shadow banned. I haven't been flagged. I haven't been banned. I've just adapted, evolved, and grown.
Yeah. So if you don't, I'm assuming that you don't book a lot of sessions specifically through social media. Is that right?
Actually, I get quite a bit through Instagram.
Oh, okay.
I do get quite a few inquiries for Instagram. I did have quite a large following on my Facebook page. I still do. It's almost 13,000 people. But I ignored it for a long time. I did find that on my social media, I was getting just not my target ideal client. Mm-hmm. I was getting a lot of foreign men or just people that were never going to work with me. They were just there to look at some pretty pictures of half naked people.
That makes sense. So then if it's not, oh, I'm sorry, go on.
No, it's okay. So I just neglected. I just shut down. I didn't shut down, but I just stopped posting to Facebook for a while. Even now, I'm still kind of lazy. I post to Instagram and have Instagram post to my Facebook page right now. But I did go through and actually make it so certain areas can't view my page. So it's not open to the entire universe anymore.
Yeah.
For me, it's quality over quantity. I don't care about the numbers if they're not serving me in my journey. Right. I mean, you can follow me if you like my art. You never have to book me. That's still great. You're still a quality follower because you're actually interacting and, you know, there because you support me and support what I do and you love to see my art. That's great. But obviously, I really want to focus and connect on people I'm actually going to connect with.
Yeah, absolutely. And I don't think that's strange at all. I would do the exact same thing.
Yeah. So I think it's just kind of flying under the radar to some extent, you know.
Yeah. Whatever works. So if you're getting some inquiries through Instagram and it's hard to post on social media, where are you getting, would you say, the majority of your boudoir bookings?
Definitely through my website.
Your website.
Yeah. So Google searches. And just making sure your SEO is good. You want to be kind of the top ranking person on Google, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So utilizing Google Ads, I'm horrible at blogging, and I have good intentions, but definitely blogging, it helps.
Mm-hmm.
I use WordPress for my website, and you can put a plugin called Yoast, which helps you with your SEO. It's kind of fun. I was training my hubby how to use it, and it was like a personal challenge for him because Yoast has red, green, and yellow lights. So red is like, this sucks, you need to work on this. And they'll tell you information about what you need to do to make it better.
Uh-huh.
Yellow is like, it's okay, but it could still be better. And green's like, you did it, this is awesome, it's Google approved. And so I remember one day he came running upstairs, he's like, I made all the lights green. He was so excited. But that's really gonna help you. And then just learning, it's really, what was fascinating too, there's something new I learned recently, and it was not really like, it was business and industry related more. People have changed the kind of the search words and the keywords that you really want to tag when you're doing things like a Facebook ad or a Google ad. It's not so much about photography anymore, but it's lifestyle. So what is the lifestyle things? You know, we used to type in things like Victoria's Secret and like, you know, these kind of keywords. Like if people like that, then they're going to like boudoir photography. Mm-hmm. But it's changed now. It's like hot yoga or, you know, crunchy mums or whatever. It's really going to depend on your target market and what kind of client you're looking for. What does he or she do? What's their job? How do they spend their downtime? All that kind of stuff. You really need to, and that's going to be different for all of us. I don't think there's a boudoir specific thing. I think it's just going to depend on who your target market and ideal client is.
Of course. And that makes sense.
Yeah.
On your website, it says that you are a believer in the power of vulnerability. And you talked a little bit about this earlier, but can you expand on that and what it is that you mean by that?
I think I'm an empath, and I've struggled with that most of my life. I remember being little and everybody would be like, oh, there goes Jessica. She's going on a tangent, talking about herself again. She's so self-involved. And I've learned through life that has never been my intent. It used to hurt my feelings when people would say that, because I'm like, that's not what I'm trying to do. I want to connect with people. I want to relate to people. So I share my story with you so that I can be like, do we have something in common? Do you understand how I feel? Or you're telling me something that happened to you, so I talk about something similar that happened to me so that you can see I relate to you. Mm-hmm. I understand. And I think that is being vulnerable. It's not about being vulnerable because I'm half naked. It's not about being vulnerable. It's just stripping down all of the layers and being candid and authentic and genuine and just connecting with other human beings. And like I was saying earlier, that vulnerability is brave and it is courage. And so I think it takes a lot of being brave and being courageous to connect with other human beings. It's a kind of a scary thing, right? To put yourself out there, to tell your story and then risk people either making fun of you or being like, you're the only one that's ever happened to. And that's just not the case. That there's always somebody else that maybe needs to hear your story to know they're not alone, or you need to tell it so other people can come to you and be like, it's okay, I understand, and you're not alone. So that's kind of my whole message, is that I want people to share their stories, and that doesn't have to mean that they verbally spill their guts to me, or that they write out their life story, but I just need them to go there in their own mind, in their own heart, and in their own self through our session, that they're kind of working on it. I'm not a therapist.
How do you get them in that spot?
It's a lot of talking. I talk a lot. My camera, I say I talk more than I shoot during a session. And again, I'm not a therapist. I'm not sitting there like, you know, I can help fix your problems or make everything better. But sometimes people just need somebody there to listen and to relate and to have empathy. And I think that I think that's what I've learned over these years, is that that's what I excel at and that's what I do. I mean, every single client, I've never had a client leave here without saying, you made me feel so comfortable. Like, I have lots of clients that don't come in expecting to get naked. They're like, no, I'm not getting naked, no. End of the session, they're like, okay. And they're walking around my studio naked in front of me and talking to me. And they're like, I did not expect to feel this way. And so I can't tell you what my secret sauce is. I don't know exactly what I do to help people to feel that comfortable, other than I just talk and I relate and I just try to connect with them in any possible way that I can.
Let me ask you a side question. Do you know who Kristen Kaup is?
I do not.
Okay. Kristen Kaup. I haven't kept up with her in a while. I'm not sure how much she still does, but she did a lot of like copywriting for photographers. And in one of her books, she says that, or maybe it was her email list, but she says that like small talk is like the worst thing in the world that like she can imagine. Oh. She would rather just like fall in a volcano than like make small talk and just like talk about the weather. Would you say that it's similar for you? Would you rather have small
talk? Yeah, it's not small talk. I ask big questions. I try to go deeper. And I always tell people, I'm like, if you're not comfortable talking about this, just tell me to shut up or fuck off. Yeah. You know, like, you don't have to talk that. But I don't do it in a way that I'm sitting here interviewing them and asking them 20 questions.
Right.
I'm just naturally letting it come up in conversation. So it might start off as small talk. I'll be like, so, you know, like, how many kids do you have, or do this, or what do you do for work? I mean, I need something to start with, right? So, I mean, it's going to start that way. But I also send out pre-questionnaires before my sessions that kind of, again, asking open-ended questions, because most people want to talk, right? So if you give them an opportunity to, and that's hard for me because, as you can tell, I like to talk, is to shut up and listen too, right? So if I ask somebody something, I just listen, and then I engage when I need to show that empathy and to relate and connect. But at the most time, I'm just letting them do most of the talking.
Do you think that, I take that back. I don't want to load that question. What do you find are some common mistakes that new boudoir photographers make?
Feeling like you have to do everything right 24/7 right out the gates, whether that's with your shooting style, whether that's with how you're running your business. There's no overnight special secret that's going to make you an instant success or an instant, you know, acclaimed amazing artist. It's a process and it's a journey. And it can be painful and slow sometimes, but just enjoy the ride. I mean, I blinked and I'm like, how am I here? How am I, you know, how are you sitting here interviewing me right now? I don't remember. Never stop learning. Don't get complacent. When you get complacent, you stop learning and then you stop growing and then your work becomes stagnant. I'd say the biggest, yeah, I think it's just, they just feel like they have to get it all right away, right out the gate. And it's just, it's not possible.
Yeah.
So don't get hung up on that. Don't be afraid to make mistakes, to experiment, to try new things. Because the only way that you're going to learn is by doing.
Would you be willing to share some of the early mistakes that you made early on that you wish that you didn't?
Like, my husband's looking at me like, I got a whole bunch here for you. I can
tell. No, because mistakes are hard to prove.
No, they are. I'm guilty of a lot of this at the beginning. I thought I had to light it a certain way. I thought that I had to pose a certain way. I got so hung up on posing early on in my career that I thought it was so important. I mean, obviously it is. We don't want to, you know, wound another human being by taking an unflattering photo of them and being like, hey. See, there goes my train wreck again. My brain's just like out the window. Ask your question again. It'll block it. Mistakes I made.
Right? Sharing any mistakes that you made early on, yeah.
I think posing was my biggest one. And just lighting.
Spending too much time
on
it?
I felt like I had to do it a certain way. It had to look a certain way. People expected a certain thing. And once I finally was just like, why am I stressing about this? I might not even like it at the end of the day, but I did it because I thought that's what the clients wanted or what my peers wanted. And I just was like, I'm just going to do me. Things got a lot better. And I started attracting the type of client I wanted instead of the type of client I didn't want. Mm-hmm. even as recently in the last year, I used to do my black and whites were super contrasty, super sharp. They just had a very specific look. And I missed film. I wanted grainy, gritty, beautiful, muddy black and whites, still with contrast, but like they were just so different than what I had been putting out. And I was so afraid to start posting those because I was scared that my clientele wouldn't like it. Mm. Or, I mean, my peers were less of a concern because I was worried about the people booking me and making me money, right? Like they might not like it, or they're used to seeing this. This is what they expect from me. And so then I got hung up on the idea of, I need to create a whole separate session experience if they want this. And then I didn't produce the work that I wanted to because I got so stuck in this, how do I create the second session? How do I explain this and articulate it to a client so they know the regular Jessica Ray look versus the one she really wants to produce, you know? And I got hung up on that and I wasted valuable time and I tortured myself without reason until I finally was just like, why am I doing this? Why am I putting other people's perceptions, which I don't even know, on myself? And I just said, fuck it. And I just went with it and I just fully jumped in both feet and committed. And now I get people message me like, oh my God, I love your grainy black and whites. Oh, I love this. Or, oh, that was why I booked you, because I love the way you use the light and I like this. And I'm like, why was I in my own way for so long?
I would imagine that would be incredibly frustrating, especially after putting in all that stress and kind of heartache into that. But I think that you figured out what that a lot of people don't really know what they're looking at when it comes to photography, and that we as artists are inside of our head all the time and are often the most critical people of our own work. It's funny because I often share in the group that whenever I go to shoot weddings, I'm so critical of my work that when I look at it, I either love it or I hate it, right? Yep. But when I deliver a wedding, I always find that my brides will like make their profile picture, like one of the photos that I was like, oh, this is terrible, you know, from a technical standpoint. But that doesn't mean anything to them because it's how they felt.
Do you know, I think that's one reason I really like the genre of boudoir. I think that it has the most, this is going to sound weird, but the most room for error, okay? It doesn't have to be perfectly lit and perfectly tack sharp focus. And that's like, oh, well, it was really dark and I had a shoot at 3000 ISO and my images are super grainy. Yeah, I meant to do that. Oh, I missed focus. I meant to do that. Oh, there's a motion blur. I meant to do that. Like it adds to the art. Mm-hmm. You know, like I feel like we just have a few more graces in this specific genre than you do with others. And again, with weddings, you can kind of get away with that a little. Any genre you can, but, you know, like if a headshot was super noisy or out of focus, we'd all be
no go. No good.
That doesn't work. Yeah. So I feel like, I guess, boudoir is more artistic and you have more more room for play.
Do you think that that's just the lens that you've put on it, or do you think that that's interesting? Because I think that kind of what you discovered there is really important. You know, because it's playing around with those settings and figuring out what works and doesn't work, and oftentimes you can find things that you love through a situation that you didn't mean to be in. You know, like by using a slower shutter speed or something like that, and giving yourself that okay is super important. It's got to be.
I can't tell you how many times when I was starting and I was experimenting and I would look at the back of camera and I'd be like, oh, I don't like this. And then I would stop doing it and I'd move to something else. And then I'd get it on the computer and be like, oh, that didn't suck. Mm-hmm. And so now I've made a conscious effort when I'm trying something new, shoot at least 10 or 20 frames of that, you know, like just do it. Be like, you know, it's not my favorite. It's not my go-to, but it doesn't mean it's bad. And you just kind of have to let it percolate a little bit. And sometimes you come back and you're like, okay. Or at least you can look at it and go, I can see what I would do different, or I would change it. So again, don't be afraid to experiment and just fully commit, because I did not do that enough when I first started.
I'm not sure if there's a way to end this interview better than that. That last statement was perfect. It was perfect. So thank you very much for sharing that.
No problem. Thank you.
Yeah. Jessica, before I let you go, I want to be conscious of your time. Before I let you go, can you let everybody who's listening know where they can find you online and see more of your work?
Yes, my website is artistjessicaray.com, and Ray is R-A-E, and all my social media is exactly the same. So facebook.com, artistjessicaray, Instagram, artistjessicaray. I keep it simple.
Yeah, and you're going to be doing some teaching soon with the, is it the Do More Camp or?
Yeah, Camp Do More. This will be its second year. It takes place just outside of Toronto in Ontario, Canada this June. We're sold out this year, but I'll definitely be back next year. It is the most amazing experience ever. I've been to a few different conferences and retreats, and Camp Do More is definitely unique in the way that they have structured things. You can come and just attend, and you don't have to take all of the classes. You can just come hang out. Everybody kind of does their own shootouts and hangs out. I mean, it's kind of like a nudist camp with people wearing cameras running around. It's an incredible experience. But they have a lineup of amazing educators, instructors every year. I think there's like 8. No, is there that many instructors? There's not that many. I think there's like 8 to 10 instructors each year. And it's a variety from business to shoot style to everything in between. I mean, there's definitely something for everyone. I only took 2 classes last year just to kind of get my feet wet. This year I'm teaching 3 classes, and I'm going to take every other class I can when I'm not teaching. So
I love it. I recently interviewed Michael Sasser for the podcast.
Yes.
Yeah, and when I told him, that's what he said. He was. I told him that I was interviewing you, and he was super excited to meet up at Camp Dumas.
Yeah, he's fabulous. I love him. He's a great guy. I'm excited to get to meet him in person, and I do. Even if you're new and you're feeling intimidated to go to these type of things, please don't. These communities, especially with the boudoir community, I mean, and I think you can attest to this, with the wedding industry is huge. There's so many groups, there's so many pockets, there's so many things. Boudoir really is intimate. We're a smaller industry, we're a smaller, you know, genre, and we are, everybody I've met has been so awesome and so welcoming and so amazing. And they're all so different. Like, it's just great. And I was, the number one concern of people that want to attend camp and haven't was that they were having social anxiety and they were really nervous. I can tell you that probably 85% of the people going have social anxiety. So don't fret. We have color-coded name tags, because we have this big joke with Do More about who's a hugger and who isn't. Mm-hmm. So we had blue name tags for the people that were like, yes, I'm open for hugs. And red is like, maybe once I get to know you or ask me first. Yeah. So we're very conscious of everybody.
I have a feeling that you are a blue name tag.
I am.
Yeah, I knew it. How I guess. Yeah. Well, again, Jessica, I want to say thank you again so much for coming on the podcast and sharing everything that you did. I look forward to keeping up with you in the future, and I wish you the best of luck at Camp Do More.
Great. Thank you so much.
Oh, man, I loved my time in talking with Jessica. She was so insightful, you know, so insightful. When I first started photography, I think one of the things that I looked out for most was the technical aspects, right? I wanted a definitive answer on how to do things from a very technical standpoint. I wanted to know what settings should I use. I wanted to know where I should point the camera, what lens I should be using. And after this interview with Jessica, it just really reaffirmed that those things don't really matter. I mean, they matter to a degree, but it really is... you know, how you interact with a camera, how you interact with your clients, how you make your clients feel. And in fact, my biggest takeaway from this episode was even how photography was kind of became a form of therapy for Jessica, like the self-expression that she found through her photography. And it just goes to show, you know, how powerful photography itself can be, because we as photographers think that photography is most powerful to the viewer, to the person looking at the photo, when in fact it can be, which, you know, Jessica is proof of, it can be just as powerful to the photographer as well. So Jessica, if you're listening, I want to thank you so much for sharing everything that you did with the listeners and myself included, taking the time out to chat with me. I really did enjoy our time and everything that you shared. So again, Jessica, thank you so much. One last time, I want to again invite you to subscribe to the podcast so that you can get more weekly interviews with some of the world's best photographers like we got today with Jessica. All right, that is it for this week's interview. Until next week, I want you to get out. I want you to keep shooting. I want you to stay safe. And I want you to focus on yourself. That's it. I'll talk to you next week. I love you all.
If you enjoyed today's podcast, please leave us a review in iTunes or your favorite podcast player. And continue the conversation with Raymond and other listeners of the podcast by joining the Beginner Photography Podcast Facebook group today. Thank you. We'll see you again next week.